Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Donald Turner, Republican Roger Keats, and Salim Muakil of In These Times. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com, where we also offer an ongoing video streaming of the broadcast. Even if you miss it each and every week, it'll be there for many, many months or years or forever at beyondthebeltway.com. Well, tonight we're going to talk about a variety of things. We're going to be talking about the buildup of troops in Afghanistan. We're going to be talking about Iran. We're going to be talking about the growing violence, not only in Chicago, but also in urban neighborhoods all over the United States. That'll be in the second hour. But we're going to kick off by what we talked about at the end of last week's broadcast, and that was President Obama, as you all know, went to Copenhagen along with the leaders of three other nations to try to bring back Olympic gold in the Olympics for 2016 to their respective countries. And he stubbed his toe. It didn't happen. The city of Chicago did not get it. We have briefly discussed it on this program over the last several months. I want to talk about the political fallout of that. Don Turner joins us. Don, former president of the Chicago Federation of Labor, longtime Chicagoan. How big an embarrassment is this for the president? Because many are billing it as somehow an embarrassment to the president, the fact that Chicago lost in the first round. Is it a big deal?
I don't see it as much of a big deal. The president was right to go. It's the United States' bid, not Chicago's bid. It's the U.S. Olympic Committee that makes the bid. And I think he's perfectly right. Look, it would have been a boon to Chicago had we got it in terms of job creation and most of all, elevating Chicago to global city status. I think our biggest opposition was probably the fact that South America had never had an Olympic event. So I think popularity of soccer worldwide and Pelé, as you said earlier when we were talking privately, I think that's quite understandable.
Roger Keats also joins us. He's our Republican tonight. Roger, nice to have you with us.
Pleasure.
Your reaction, you live in suburbia, but you basically have grown up in the Chicagoland area. Your reaction to the political aspect of it, and is this a situation where the president would have been damned no matter what he did?
Well, and remember, I'm an old South Sider, so much of those Olympics would happen right where I grew up, from Hyde Park, et cetera. And I know as a Republican I'm supposed to blast Obama and I'm supposed to say it's his fault. No, it's not. You know, I mean, it was sort of irrelevant. If we'd gotten it, he'd have gotten a plus. But truth is, he was not the issue. Frankly, even the fact that we may be Chicagoans, you hate to say it, but Rio had a better bid. I mean, we had a good team. I mean, anyone who knows Pat Ryan knows he's just an absolute class act. He did what he could. The mayor wanted to do it. Everybody was excited about it. The group supporting him were the average Chicago citizen, and I think this is what actually defeated it more than anything else. The average Chicago citizen was anything from ambivalent to anti, they were excited. Yeah, 50-50 at best. And again, with the corruption problems in Chicago, I don't think anyone thought Chicago could pull it off without bankrupting itself. But do I think there's political fallout? No. Do I think Barack Obama should blame? No. It happened. That's life.
Salim Muakil also joins us from In These Times. You probably know a lot of people for and against it. Your reaction, personally.
Well, I know many people against it. I'm happy that I must admit I was a bit ambivalent about the games. I knew that it would provoke some economic benefit to the city, and especially the South Side, the Washington Park area. But also, many people were really concerned about the gentrification issue. Many of the organizations in the area were very much against it because they didn't think it would ultimately benefit them. So I have some ambivalence about it. I don't think we should blame the president for it. However, I think it happens at a very pivotal time in his tenure, and you know, with the Republicans using everything they can to denounce him and to belittle him, I think this really added to that in a way that.
But if they start cheering, as Don said, if they start cheering a loss by the United States, how patriotic are they? In other words, their hatred of Obama, they couldn't get over their hatred of Obama to be euphoric that the country that they allegedly love lost out.
The most important thing is
you're inaccurate in something that I got to correct.
Go ahead.
The Democrat hatred of George Bush was a heck of a lot deeper than the Republican dislike of Barack Obama.
I don't deny that. And by the way, there are some people who I've actually heard say that really they wanted to blame Bush for it because they described it as anti-Americanism. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't think it was necessarily anti-Americanism.
But again, it's
part of what you've heard. Don, your response.
Yeah, look, I'm a baseball fan. If a guy bats 300, which means he's hitting 3 out of 10 pitches. He's doing terrific.
And he's making a lot of money.
He's making a lot of money, and he's a great player.
He's obscenely overpaid.
Maybe, but that's the way
the
world
market,
is.
That's what the market will
he
bear.
He gets what the market will bear. And what people who talk about them being obscenely paid don't want to come to grips with and why the public has offense at it, they look at the true face of capitalism. He's out to get what he can. And that's why you think it's obscene, because when we look at the true face of capitalism, unadulterated, which is a baseball player going for the biggest salary he can, we don't like it. So when you say it's obscene, I'm glad to hear a Republican saying he thinks it's obscene.
But would everybody agree with what Don basically said is that, now again, this is what I would say I would fault maybe the media, again, maybe the hometown media, is because did they really put it in context? Because I agree with what Don said. When I looked at the final four, you know, months and months ago, I said real.
Yeah,
real for
you.
The purpose of that
real.
They was, you know, it had never been to South America, mm-hmm. And when they made that presentation and they made that case, I mean, they had a stronger case, notwithstanding the fact that, I mean, some people say that, you know, Chicago's bid was boring. I didn't
flat.
Particularly think
it was flat.
I didn't think the videos were terribly effective. I thought Michelle Obama was probably the best. Notwithstanding all of that, I mean, you know, we could have provided a cure for cancer as part of our presentation, and I think South America was going to get
well, South
this.
America is ascendant many ways, and I think this just simply reinforced that.
Ever been to Rio, and I've been there, and once you get off the Ipanema Beach and, you know, all those beaches, you get 6 blocks and you got to carry a shotgun there.
Right.
This is a city that really will benefit. Frankly, whether the Olympics would have been good or bad for Chicago is a minor point. Rio, it is a massive plus. And I think the Olympic Committee, which is not exactly the straightest group in the world anyway, you know, they just saw it as a political decision. There's a reason for Rio and nothing personal. They don't think we needed it anyway.
I think the average citizen overlooks the value of tourism to a city like Chicago.
Oh, no. I think people understand that.
Let me finish. We don't have factories that have 800 people anymore. You look at a big hotel, a convention hotel, count the number of rooms. That's how many jobs are there. 800-room hotel, 800 jobs. So when the mayor went out and made this pitch and tried to put Chicago on the global map, for international tourism and stuff, this was the right thing to do for Chicago.
But we're already there now, and I agree with everything you're saying, but like when I was in the Senate, even as a Republican.
Hang on 1 second. I want to hear that reaction. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we'll take some calls and then move on to another topic.
NAPA has breaks for just about anything, but no one makes breaks for the one thing we'd like to stop most, breast cancer. That's why NAPA is proud to partner with Susan G. Komen for the cure. And this month, when you spend $25 at a participating NAPA Auto Parts store or NAPA Auto Care Center, you'll get a free NAPA Susan G. Komen for the cure travel mug while supplies last. NAPA will also donate $250,000 to Komen. NAPA, get the good stuff and support a great cause.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
From San Juan, Puerto Rico to Vancouver, Canada, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks for joining us tonight, 1-800-723-8289. Let's head to Houston, Texas, where Carlos is listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight. Go ahead.
Hey, good to hear you out there. I'd like to comment on the president going to Copenhagen.
Sure.
He should never have gone. He should have sent an emissary. This is an embarrassment for him, and I'm glad we didn't get it. I am glad because he would have given money, kickback to his cronies up in Chicago. That's why they wanted it. It wasn't patriotism. It was so that we can hear for the next 7 years how this president got us the Olympics. Thank God we don't have to listen to that.
But let me ask you a question. Said send an emissary, if the other three cities are sending, you know, the leaders of their nation, isn't it a slap in the face of not only the sending city? And by the way, I'll let you, elaborate on your second point. But it seems to me that it's sort of indefensible not to send the president. And again, we have never sent a president before, however, so
we
that is unique.
We should never send the president. The president is above that. We should send emissaries. That's it. It shouldn't be about him. It should be about America. You send an emissary, we get it, and everybody's happy. If he goes to try to get his cronies kickback money using the Olympics,
okay,
we're not happy about that.
Stay on the line. I want to get everybody an opportunity to respond. Roger Keats, speak to the second point about what is the local what happens if Obama had not gone? What would have been the ramifications had he not gone?
I don't think there have been any ramifications, but the truth is, and I'm not saying this as an attack or a defense of anyone, Barack Obama would not be president today without Richard Daley. And, you know, every now and then you got to dance with the one who brung you. And Richard Daley needed a favor. And, frankly, he thought that might put it over the top. And I'm not saying the president's right or wrong. I'm just saying sometimes you got to dance with the one who brung you. And his part about the corruption in Chicago. Is the Pope Catholic? Is this a problem in Chicago? Yeah. Come on.
Salim Mouakil, what happens if the president doesn't go?
Well, it probably would have been interpreted as a snub had he not gone. I think also he's so well liked internationally that I think people would use that as a sort of, you know, some currency to gain favor. Because Chicago's only known internationally because of Al Capone, Michael Jordan, and perhaps police torture, because Amnesty International singled out Chicago as really the only U.S. city with police torture problems. And so that might have figured into it as well.
Have they ever been to the Middle East, police torture problems? Ever been to Russia? Ever been to China, police torture problems?
They've condemned it there as well, but this is the only American city that has been condemned internationally.
Stick to the question, guys. The question to you is, what would have happened if Obama had not gone?
I think it was exactly right. It would have been interpreted as a snub. It would have been interpreted as a snub to the U.S. Olympic Committee also, when you got leaders from elsewhere in the world making the same pitch. It would have said that this is not important to the United States. It is important. Yeah. And let's not forget that when he was there, he also met with the leadership from the U.S. team from the Middle East that's currently fighting a war.
Yeah, McChrystal.
So did he meet McChrystal halfway? Was that a critical aspect of his going? It might have been the thing that actually tipped the scale. We'll find out sometime, 10 or 12 years from now.
I think that was a much meeting with General McChrystal. Remember, you're talking to a retired Army colonel. Meeting with General McChrystal was far more important than Olympic did.
I think that might have been the real reason. I'm going to meet you halfway.
I think that may be the case. Last word to you, Carlos.
We'll
never know how much money was made because we're not getting the Olympics, so you'll never know how much money was spent. But I think had the president not gone and we would have ended up with the same result, people would have said, why didn't he go? Because we would have would have been some people, perhaps many people, who believed that had he gone, there would have been a different result.
Bush didn't go, and we got it. He made it about himself. He should have sat down with the general and said, let's win Afghanistan, instead of with Mayor Daley and say, I'll try to get the front money for the boys.
Well, listen, we don't know whether that was the case or not, but we are going to talk about... But stereotypes are built on...
Stereotypes of Texans and people from the South, and we have stereotypes of Tinseltown, and we have stereotypes of, you know, Northeast. Yeah. And so I suppose Chicago has its stereotypes.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Tim in Chicago. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce, and the panel. Hi.
Hi.
My own personal opinion is that the president actually gave credibility to the bid. Had Mayor Daley gone by himself, it would have been a joke. In my opinion, gentlemen, Mayor Daley has operated a corrupt administration for 20 years with like 95% impunity. Okay? I mean, he would have got this big pot of money, had the Olympics come to Chicago, diced it, sliced it with his cronies, and he would have just lined some pockets of his administration once again. So, I personally was glad that they didn't come.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go to Louise in Oak Park.
Can I say something back?
Yes, he's gone.
I still think the credibility of the bid was Pat Ryan, who is just a class act. He was the money. You know, all the other guys, it was nice, but if Pat Ryan hadn't been there, this bid would have been zilch years ago.
Yes, $77 million is what was raised in the Chicago business community for this bid. Louise in Oak Park, go ahead.
I think the crime that's here, especially with the children being killed, like that young boy that was just buried, you know, I understand that film is all over the Internet now, all over the world. And I do think, you may say another country there has a lot of crime, but I don't think it's, you know, half as bad as here with kids being killed. And we have the reputation of, bad education and a lot of things. And we have greatness, but we have bad things, too. And
police
I think
torture.
Obama knew. He had a feeling we were going to lose. It looks like his heart wasn't in it because even in his campaign, he was going around apologizing for the arrogance of the United States.
Yep. Well, listen, thanks very much for your call. And by the way, your point about the crime problem in Chicago, it will be discussed in context with crime problems in urban areas all over the United States in the second hour. But I do want to switch gears right now. And by the way, if there are callers on the line that want to talk more about the Olympics, we're kind of switching gears now. I think we've sort of beaten the dead horse. Chicago didn't get it. The United States didn't get it. The president went. I think he would have been damned if he went, damned if he did not go. I think he did the right thing. And again, it was a bid that didn't measure up to what I think what the IOC was looking for. And they were looking for a bid, a strong bid, and the real bid was strong. The president of Brazil was out there, one of the biggest cheerleaders for his country. We cannot dismiss the opposition here. And as the president said, you know, in sports, you can play a great game and still lose. And clearly in the case of South America and Rio, they played a great game. They won. And again, I think from the get-go, they always had history on the side. And the other thing they had on their side is they had romance. There's a romance that is associated with Rio, notwithstanding the crime that surrounds it. But Rio was a strong bid. They got it, and we congratulate them on getting it.
We should wish them well. Right. Hey, great. Wish them well. It's an emerging friend of ours.
Let's not forget the Olympic creed while we're at it, which is that the competition itself is the most important thing, whether you win or lose.
That's right. We'll see whether many people believe that. The other thing that we want to kind of switch gears and talk about, and this was the other important thing that happened. In fact, as someone suggested, maybe the most important thing, or I think probably the most important thing that happened in Copenhagen was the visit on the tarmac between the president of the United States and the man that he selected to really wage the war and conduct the war in Afghanistan, General Stanley McChrystal. And I want to get a reaction from you, and we should mention that Roger is a retired lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, so you have some expertise on offering military assessment. But you have the president of the United States selecting the man that says, okay, here's the guy that I want to put my game plan together. The guy who is selected then comes back, and he releases information that he wants 40,000, or at least it's leaked. We don't know if it came from him, but the story is out in advance that he wants an additional 40,000 troops. Does that put the president in a difficult situation if indeed he disagrees with that assessment after reading the full report by General McChrystal?
Let me put it in a perspective, though. I want to quote probably America's most distinguished general over the last 10, 15 years, a general named Colin Powell. And quoting classic military doctrine, this is what a military officer is trained to believe, okay? Play to your advantage. Our advantage is overwhelming strength. If you're going to commit, and you don't have to commit, but if you're going to commit to putting troops in, go with your strength, and our strength is overwhelming strength with equipment, bombing, you name it. And whether you blame it on George Bush, whether you blame it on Barack Obama, whether you blame it on the Secretary of Defense, I'm not arguing who it is. But the point is they have violated basic military doctrine time and time again, the same thing Lyndon Johnson did in Vietnam. If you're going to fight a war, fight a war. If you're not going to fight a war, don't fight, as Colin Powell said. If you break it, you own it. Classic military doctrine. We chose to break it. If you're going to break it, you own it. You got to fix it. We chose to do it.
Don Turner, your reaction.
Look, it's the most critical thing on the plate for the United States outside of the economy. The game here, in my view, is Pakistan. The game is not Afghanistan. The Taliban wants to destabilize Pakistan. They have nuclear weapons. They have a population about two-thirds the size of the United States. This is the strategy of the enemy. I think it's clear that they have a pretty good strategy from their point of view. Now, these are the people that put together planes. They attacked us. There have been attempted bombings in the United States. This is the heart-beating core of where the Taliban is, where Al-Qaeda is. I mean, what are we going to do, sit back and take our lumps and let them direct it from the outside, or are we going to go after them where their home is?
I think
I'm a hawk on this issue. I think if you got an enemy, look, this is an enemy that killed 3,000 of our people. They attacked us and killed 3,000 of our
people. We've got a break.
Salim,
I want to get your reaction. Mm-hmm. I think you might be having a little different assessment, and we'll hear it when we come back from Chicago.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 2.05% APY. People think there's a catch. But no, no catch. No teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese. No hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
In this ever-changing world, Ility is essential. Ility creates versatility and respectability. But where do you get Ility? With an MBA earned from DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management, Ility is easy to find. The credibility you expect, the flexibility you need, and the ability to balance work, school, and life. Attend classes online or at our 85-plus locations nationwide. Learn more at keller.edu. Keller, your professional edge for 35 years.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our Democrat tonight is Don Turner. He is the president emeritus of the Chicago Federation of Labor. That's AFL-CIO and comes out of the teachers union and a lifelong union member. Always good to have Don on the program. Our Republican tonight is Roger Keats. Roger Keats is for 16 years, he was an Illinois state senator. He's a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, retired. He's been in the securities business, and now he is running for the presidency of the Cook County Board, which is the second largest county in the United States. And Roger's going to try to win a race that Republicans generally don't win, but he's out there running the good fight. Salim Muwakkil also joins us this evening. For the last 25 years, he has been the senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals, and also he is a talk show host on WVON radio, and we're going to get his assessment of what's happening in Afghanistan after I take just a moment to tell you about something that you've heard me allude to for the last couple of weeks, and that is the Radio Hall of Fame. This is one of the benefits for the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It is coming up on Saturday, November, it's actually November 7th. It's Saturday, November 7th at 9 p.m. at the Renaissance Hotel in Chicago. And we just received word last week that we can confirm the following presenters. All of these people will be present. They are Rush Limbaugh, Dennis Miller, Willard Scott from the Today Show, and Chicago favorite Jonathan Brandmeier. They will all be there. And if you would like to get tickets to the Radio Hall of Fame, you can go to the website museum.tv. That is museum.tv. And also another event that's coming up in December, which is on December 5th, Bill Jackson, who is one of the icons of Chicago television history. He will be coming to Chicago at the Lake Theater in Oak Park. That's on Saturday, December 5th. And if you're interested in attending that event, tickets are $60. You can go to museum.tv or call 312-822-0512. Now, Salim Muwakkil, before the break, we had heard from our Republican and our Democrat basically saying supporting General McChrystal. I'd like you to address my first question, and then I want you to expand your position on the issue. Do you think that it's wrong? It was wrong to sort of play this out in the media. Has General McChrystal, whether he was personally responsible for leaking the information, but whoever leaked it, I mean, wasn't their goal to force the president into a corner?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a struggle right now between those in the Pentagon who tend to think of solutions in military terms and those others surrounding the president who think another route may be more effective. I think the president in many ways backed himself into a wall rhetorically with all of this bellicose rhetoric about Afghanistan when he was trying to turn people away from Iraq. But McChrystal is not simply talking about military buildup. He's talking about a nation-building kind of enterprise in which we go in, try to help the people, you know, education, build schools, build roads, infrastructure, and all of that. And I think that that's what he's saying. If we don't go in like that, we will be unsuccessful. He's not simply talking about bombing people out of existence. And I think that many in the Obama administration are beginning to reconsider this whole military approach. They're beginning to say that, I mean, I hear arguments increasingly. I read about arguments in which people are looking at this as more police action in much the way that Europe is handling the terrorist problem.
You know, I'm glad you talked about what he said during the campaign, because, you know, if the president has been forced into a corner on this issue, it isn't because whether General McChrystal or one of McChrystal's supporters started to leak this information about the troop buildup. I don't think anybody was surprised that the general was going to come back and ask for more troops. They generally do.
Right.
But it seems to me where he has been boxed into a corner here is because of his own words repeatedly during the campaign. He was the one that always said that we're going to protect the American people. We're going to go after those who killed, you know, 3,000 people. And those people, we're wrong about Iraq, but all of those people that we're looking for, they're basically all in the hills of Pakistan or they're in Afghanistan. And Afghanistan was the central point in the war on terror.
Yes.
So once you say that, if you say that is absolute, and he said it 50 times at least in every debate.
And it was the Democrat position, not just Barack Obama, across the board. Every Democrat candidate said Afghanistan, Afghanistan, Afghanistan.
Absolutely.
And
so
I think
it was
overcompensation. You know,
so, now you
come
back.
Does anybody think that's inaccurate?
No,
well,
no, I don't.
Yeah, no, actually, let me take it.
Okay,
I agree
Colonel?
Up to a point, but I'm going to go a step farther. Ever heard of a country called Iran? I mean, who finances al-Qaeda? Who finances the Taliban? Who finances Hamas? Who finances Hezbollah? Number one, as much as the military is Afghanistan, now into the wild regions of Pakistan, the truth is enemy number one is Iran.
But let's focus on
Iran was helping us with Afghanistan in the beginning. I mean, people were surprised about how forthcoming Iran was.
But here,
back
to you, because I really want to get clarification on this from everybody, and that is, do you agree then? I mean, he backed himself into this corner.
I agree.
And then he picks a guy that says, here's my guy. He picks a guy and he praises the guy. Then the guy comes back with a recommendation. How do you not take that recommendation now? How do you not do it?
Well, he will say that conditions on the ground have changed.
But the general just looked at those conditions and he said, we need 40,000 people. Is he going to say, no, Rahm, I think you and Joe Biden have it right?
Well, look, let's
Don
not,
Turner.
McChrystal has a fine reputation as a general.
Absolutely.
The Army has learned a lot about fighting this kind of insurgency type of warfare. This is not Vietnam. This is not Iraq. This is a different kind of struggle. But is this an existential struggle for us as a country? I don't think there's any doubt. This is an existential struggle.
I don't think so.
I agree.
I think what we're doing is we're inflating the reputation of a cult, al-Qaeda, by this massive military response. Pakistan was very anti-radical Islam until we became so boisterous and belligerent in the region that they began to react. And the Taliban, or that radical strain, is finding some resonance. In Pakistan, we had never found resonance before. That's because of our overreaction. Had we been more moderate in our response to this cultish behavior, this really aberration from Islam, had we been more moderate, we could have changed it much easier.
Roger,
you get more moderate after they bombed New York. I mean, there is kind of a point when they bomb the World Trade Centers, you do have to kind of, you know, guys, that's a no-no. We're not happy about
Afghanistan,
this.
Afghanistan people, the Afghans, did not bomb New York. If we were going to bomb, most of the planning took place in Hamburg.
Well, but what you're saying is partially true, but the point is the Taliban, because they controlled
and they harbored al-Qaeda.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point
they
is,
harbored them. I mean, it's
a good reason.
We're splitting
there's
things.
Reason,
can't
one,
really
one
be
at
split.
A time, Roger.
There's a good reason why they did it, but it's too complex, really, to get in. I mean, radical Islam has become the surrogate ideology of people who are anti-colonialist. And until they had
colonialism is long over and gone, and DOA.
If anything, it's colonialism is a Muslim problem in the Middle
Iraq
East.
Iraq was created by colonialism. So how can you say it's gone?
All boundaries in the world were created by wars and colonialism.
No.
Every
no,
boundary
no,
in the world.
Every African country was created by colonialism.
Well, so
every North American
States.
Country.
No,
every European
no, sir.
Country.
One
no,
at a time. One United at a time.
States was the United States was created by white settlers from Europe. They exterminated the indigenous people.
Was it a British
people.
Colony? Correct.
Well, no, see,
Indians killed more Indians than we ever killed.
You are talking about the residue of colonialism. People have adopted Islam as a way, as an ideology, to fight against the lingering residue, the legacy of colonialism, which we all have to deal with.
No,
the poverty in the world is the North has wealth, the South has poverty.
But the South has socialism. We have free market. No. We have educational systems. And we have laws.
The South was colonized.
Let's bring, guys,
how can you ignore that history?
Yeah, but the point is, it's still socialism today.
Let's bring it back to where we are right now.
Yeah. Yes.
And that is the politics of the situation now. You have General McChrystal asking for up to 40,000 troops. Does he get the troops? Is the political situation such that the president is going to give him what he wants, or is he going to turn to his more political advisors, Rahm Emanuel and Joe Biden, who's suggesting that maybe we can fight this with drones and other ways to fight the
war?
Let
me say two things. Either give him the 40,000 or fire him. Either tell the general you want him to tell you how it should be done, and if you don't like his decision, fire him. But to listen to Rahm Emanuel and Joe Biden on day-to-day, we did that in Vietnam. We did that in Vietnam, and remember what a great job we did listening to Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara?
First of all, it's supposition to assume Rahm Emanuel is in charge of the war in Afghanistan. I mean, let's just face it. You know, I think Obama is calling his team together, and he's listening to a lot of viewpoints, which I want the president to listen to a lot of viewpoints. You know, if there are forces that we can use to win this war, whether it's something like a radio-free Europe, if it's soft power, if it's all those things, let's do it all.
Do it all.
But, you know, you can only have one guy in charge at a time. It's Obama. If this is his guy, he has to make a decision. He's either going to support him or he's not. And he might say to this general, look, you know, this was Grant's great strength in the Civil War. He got the job done with what he had in terms of resources. He might say, I'm going to give you 30,000, but I'm going to take the money that we'd spend on the other 10 and we're going to use it in soft power. We're going to do things like road building. We're going to do things like this to win over these populations. This is his call. That's what it means to be the CNC.
Let me tell you something that will stun you when I say this. Barack Obama's the president. Elections have consequences. And if he doesn't like the general's decision, he can fire him. He can do what he wants. Whether I agree or disagree, the president is in charge of foreign policy. And we might want to second-guess him later, and as George Bush might mention, he was second-guessed a few times, and probably pretty fairly second-guessed, but that's not the issue. The president won the election. Elections have consequences. He has the right to make these decisions. And doggone it, we ought to at least let him make the decisions and get it out of the press for a while.
But here's a point, and I want to get Salim's response when we come back. He became president because he said certain things. He talked about change you can believe in. He said he was going to do certain things. He rallied the political left to get the nomination. Then he was elected president of the United States. And I don't believe the political left is very happy with him right now. Back shortly from Chicago.
Money talks, and it sounds just like Jim Cramer.
I'm Cramer. Money talks, and sometimes it shouts when the results speak for themselves.
Investors worldwide follow Jim Cramer's advice on TV, in books, and on websites like TheStreet.com. And whether the market's up, down, or sideways, Jim's always hunting down a bull market. And now you can follow Cramer's portfolio at GetCramer.com.
Okay, here's how it works. Every time I buy or sell, I will email you ahead of time. Did you hear me? Ahead of time! It's like, if you can read, you can read my mind. My portfolio, fueled by my great research, is designed to deliver success. And I'll share it with you at GetCramer.com.
Today, you can sign up for 2 weeks of free access to Cramer's Picks and Portfolio. Just go to GetCramer.com and enter code word BUY. GetCramer.com, free today. Go to GetCramer.com, code word BUY.
From Bakersfield, California to Boston, Massachusetts. I think if we would have played the last 3 minutes, I'd put it on the air. We probably would be at war with some friendly countries. Anyway, before we take some more calls, and calls are starting to back up, so we're going to move to them rather quickly. But again, I do want to go back to what Salim said, or give Salim an opportunity to respond to what I said before the break. And that is there's – and by the way, if you did not see Saturday Night Live last night, I think the honeymoon is over for Barack Obama. I mean, the opening bit was basically the president talking about all the things that he promised and basically giving a report card on himself, and it wasn't a very impressive report card, especially if you are a progressive. And you, sir, are a progressive. I don't know whether you saw the skit last night.
I did see it.
But
I saw ironically, I saw it on a news show this morning.
We're at the age we can't stay up late enough to watch it.
What was your reaction? And the broader question is, how serious, if it's serious at all, is the president standing in the progressive left community?
It's dropping. It's dropping rapidly. He's seen as being too conciliatory to right-wing forces. People understand that he's entangled by the institutions he inherited, but at the same time, he's not making the kind of progressive moves and the deft political kinds of maneuvers that many people expected him to make. And so there's a lot of disappointment in the left about Barack Obama.
Now, one of the other issues, obviously, that a lot of time was spent in the Democratic primary and also in the presidential race, and since he's been president, is thrust back onto the front page and has been on for quite some time. And that is, as Roger Keats said, what do you do with Iran? Iran is really, maybe that is the problem number one area. And yesterday in the New York Times, there was this report. Senior staff members of the United Nations Nuclear Agency have concluded in a confidential analysis that Iran has acquired, quote, sufficient information to be able to design and produce a workable atomic bomb. It was released by the International Atomic Energy Agency. It stresses in its introduction that its conclusions are tentative and subject to further confirmation of the evidence, which it says came from intelligence agencies and its own investigations around the world. So this certainly ratchets up. It also flies in the face of a report that our own government came out with a couple of years ago.
Which everyone conceded at the time was
right.
A very politicized and inaccurate report.
Put the report of 2 years ago in context a little bit more, Roger.
Which shows one problems of how politicized some of the people of the CIA were, that in a document that clearly was inaccurate, and even the Iranians admitted was inaccurate, was allowed to be printed.
And this is in the Bush administration.
In the Bush administration, which was part of the fight he had with that group. But I want to say this is what's so important to remember. One of my favorites, Muhammad Ali and his famous rope-a-dope. Does anyone recognize a rope-a-dope out of the Iranians? They're that close, and they're against the rope. They're letting you hit them in the tummy, and you got their hands up so you don't hurt them. Does anyone recognize a rope-a-dope with what Iran's doing today? I mean, come on. Let's keep life in perspective. We're so busy with the 24-hour news cycle that no one can back off and say, geez, they're slowing us down. They're doing it intentionally. They're saying this. They're saying that. All they're doing is buying time until they've got that bomb. That's all they're doing.
Don, in your view, when the International Atomic Energy Agency basically comes out with a report that is tougher, much more serious than anything the American people have been told by its own government, what's your reaction to that?
Well, look, I think that the American government has foreign affairs responsibilities. The UN senior staff don't really have that. I mean, the United States has to go out and try to work some kind of an accommodation with Iran. So what they do with these reports, I think it may well be tempered by what their diplomatic positions are at any given point in time. It's an understandable thing. They did put the news out, maybe not in such as harsh a terms as the UN staff did, but the news is out there. And the question is, what do we do about it? That's one question. But secondly, you have the Shias, which Iran represents. What do the Sunnis in these other Arab countries do? So does Saudi Arabia now make a big push for the bomb? Do these other countries, make a big push for the bomb? How do we get the genie back in the bottle once these countries start getting nuclear weapons?
But
this
it's
is
also,
a serious
but
it, issue.
But also, I mean, in the face of this report in the New York Times, you also have the National Security Advisor for the President, Jim Jones, on television today, basically saying that is what has happened in regards to Iran in the last couple of weeks has been very significant. And basically he's talking about that he thinks there is some cooperation, the fact that they now want to open up the underground site at Quam, which we rope-a-dope. But again, he's saying that Iran wants to open it up to inspections. Is that not a plus, Roger?
That isn't the only site. It's a rope-a-dope. They're just playing games. If they're going to let us take a look at it, then you know what we want elsewhere.
So they're going to do the same thing that basically Iraq did, because they're following the same MO.
But then
if we go to the site and you're correct, it is elsewhere, then we know that. So I think getting into the site is critical.
I agree with you on that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's take a call, folks. We got some callers on the line. Let's go to Paul in Chicago. You're on the air, Paul. Well, Paul is not on the air, and we're running out of time in this hour. Listen, we got a conversation going about Afghanistan, about Iran, and we're going to continue that discussion in the next hour. We're also going to be talking about some growing violence, not only in Chicago, but also around the country. Young people being murdered at an unusual, an alarming rate. Don Turner, Salim Muwakkil, and Roger Keats will all be back in the next hour of our program. If you're watching us on television, it means we're going to see you folks next week. And if you're listening to us on radio from coast to coast and border to border, it means we've got another full hour to take your calls at 1-800-723-8289. Looks like we've got a lot of people waiting to get on the show, and we will go to them when we kick off the second hour. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Are you about to lose your home to foreclosure? Hope and help are here. The associates of the Debt Reduction Law Center would like to offer you a free, no-obligation consultation that will show you how to stop foreclosure, reduce your interest rates, and save thousands on your mortgage. Don't lose your home to foreclosure. The Debt Reduction Law Center is a network of attorneys that can help you modify the terms of your mortgage. They work for you so you can afford to live in and enjoy the place your family calls home. Call for a free, no-obligation consultation. There is absolutely no cost to find out how this program can help you save your home. Call 800-646-8709. That's 800-646-8709. It does not matter what your credit score is or how far behind you are on payment. Individual results will vary, not available in all states. For your free, no-obligation consultation, call now. 800-646-8709. Stop foreclosure in its tracks. Call today. 800-646-8709.
Get the good!
Fall into savings this month with Napa. Get a $50 rebate when you spend $250 or more on quality Napa brake parts at participating Napa Auto Parts stores, Napa Auto Care Centers, or authorized repair facilities. Don't take chances with your car's most critical safety component. Get reliable Napa brakes. Go to NapaBrakes.com for rebate form and complete details. Offer ends October 31st.
Napa. Get the good!
October is approaching, and the 2009 MLB postseason is on TBS.
Fly ball right center field. Can you believe it?
The push for the pennant is on, with every Division Series game on one network. Along with exclusive coverage of the NLCS, the excitement is here.
Swung on rim.
When the dust settles, only one team can claim their place as National League champs. The MLB postseason begins Wednesday on TBS. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Okay, with us today is that stack of money with the giant googly eyes. The money you could be saving with Geico. Tell me, it's really easy to get you. You just go to geico.com, right? Let's try two blinks for yes and one for no. Wait, did you just blink twice or once? Because I blinked and I missed it. I keep blinking.
with GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Don Turner, Republican Roger Keats, and Salim Muakil of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals. Our phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address btb@museum.tv. And in the first hour, we talked briefly about the president going to Copenhagen to try to get the Olympics for the United States, unsuccessful in doing that. But when he was on the tarmac in Copenhagen, he did meet with General McChrystal, the man that he selected to wage and manage the war in Afghanistan. The general, according to published reports, wants 40,000 additional troops. That is now a decision that the president must make in the next couple of weeks. There are to be significant, and there have been many, many meetings on it, and there will be more to come, but he will soon have to make that decision. And then, of course, the report yesterday in the New York Times that stunned many, suggesting the International Atomic Energy Commission, suggesting that Iran has sufficient information to be able to design and produce a workable atomic bomb. That appears to be a far more dire prediction than the prediction that was made a couple of years ago that from U.S. intelligence sources that maybe the Iran situation was a little blown out of proportion. Let's go to calls on the line. We have a lot of people standing by. Let's go to Al in Stickney, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to make three facts. One is that Afghanistan, Iran are not existential threats to us. You take all those countries in the Middle East combined, with the exception of Israel that has a few hundred nuclear weapons, but all the other countries combined, we have trillions of times more firepower than all of them combined. Number two, yes, if we see some terrorists in Afghanistan, we should assassinate them. But our solution should not be worse than the problem. We have killed more innocent people in Afghanistan than 3,000 that were killed in New York. Number three, if we want to limit the aspirations of countries in the Middle East from acquiring nuclear weapons, we should stop sending billions of dollars of American hard-earned money to Israel so they could add more nuclear weapons to the 200 to 300 nuclear weapons.
All right, let's let Al take a breath, stay on the line. Let's let Roger Keats tackle any one of those three topics you would prefer.
Well, a quick mention. One of the things we also need to deal with in Afghanistan is something called poppies. I mean, until we start dealing with the drug culture, part of what finances these guys is this drug culture, and we have got to deal with that.
Wait a minute. We had an opportunity to do that long ago.
Absolutely.
When we waged the war, and you know what? The United States looked the other way.
Absolutely.
And you know what?
100% right.
And it ain't going to happen now, because you know what? The people that made that decision, they want poppies to grow there because they don't have an alternative. And you know what? They don't care about the world heroin trade. They really don't. They talk about it, but because they could have done something about it.
You're 100% right, and I'm 100% with you on that. That was our error. But the second thing I want to come back to is, in the Middle East, we have one tried and true ally, and it's Israel. And while I don't always agree with everything Israel's doing in the big picture of life, I got to remember, when they draw a line in the sand, they're on the same side of the sand of that line that we are.
Salim, pick up one of those topics and let you respond to it. Stay on the line, Al. We'll come back to you.
I think that it is an egregious omission to keep Israel out of this. One of the main reasons that Iran is so serious about trying to create or develop their own nuclear alternative is because they feel threatened by the nuclear wealth, the nuclear power of Israel. And until we make at least some sort of gesture toward that fear, I don't think we make much sense to the Iranians.
John Turner.
What overt thing has Israel ever done to make them so fearful?
Invaded, they just bombed Syria. Israel just
bombed. Whoa. This started
time,
long
guys.
Before that, this push for a nuclear side in in Iran.
Well, it started because of Iraq.
Well, and also the provocation of Iraq
and our assistance to Iraq.
Israel had a multitude of rockets sent in to its country day after day, week after week, month after month before they responded. How many months should the United States wait if people start sending rockets from ships offshore to the United States before we attack whoever is doing it?
And I think
we have a right to respond immediately. They actually exercised an amazing amount of restraint.
What are you talking about? Thousands of these missiles.
Thousands of rockets came from Syrian soil.
Syria.
Into Israel.
Syria is a Ba'athist regime. Saudi Arabia, all of these Sunni Muslim countries are not Iran. Iran is responding to the what they consider an existential threat because they know that Israel will do preemptive attacks on people who they deem threatening.
I want to go back to what Al said. Al, you said they're not a threat to the United States.
Yes, they're not.
Okay. Does anybody at the table agree with that?
No.
I agree.
No.
No.
Okay. Salim agrees. Let's let Roger say why he disagrees and then why Don disagrees.
Well, I want to put one thing in perspective. These Middle Eastern despots, they use Israel as an excuse to cover their totalitarianism. You talk about torture. You talk about extremism. These Middle Eastern despots are as bad as it gets. And so they simply use Israel to say, oh, it's all Israel's fault. It is not Israel's fault. It's their method to cover up the miserable governments they represent, or the totalitarianism they represent. To claim that people who control all this oil, that can destroy large parts of the European and Asian economy, claim that's not a problem.
Don, last word to you, then we're moving on.
They're funding terrorist groups, which are blowing up subways in Spain, knocking down buildings in the United States, blowing up subways in England, and in everywhere in the civilized world.
It's a cult. A cult of terrorists that could easily be defeated by ideological warfare because they are so aberrant to the idea of Islam that we should understand that and let the people take care of them instead of giving them ammunition by attacking the people ourselves.
So we're just supposed to sit and wait while they punch us and do these things to us until they change?
If we continue to make that sort of simplistic argument, of course we're not going to
do anything. How do you expect them to change? I mean, what's going to bring them to modernity? They're in the 12th century today.
Who's trying to make them change
They're
now?
In the 12th century.
See, that kind of Western arrogance is exactly why we can't
Let's put this in perspective.
We're calling an entire civilization the 12th century.
Yes, I am.
That's arrogance, man.
It is.
And you should understand
that. But here's why.
You should understand why people, when they say why people hate us, you should understand that.
The country of Denmark, which has about 8 million people, publishes more books, new titles in 1 year than the entire Arab world. Does that tell you they're in the 12th century?
Evolve in a way that they evolve. We can't demand that they evolve in the way that we want them to.
But
they're
not evolving.
You think publishing books is important. That's important to you. That's an important value to you. There are many people in other parts of the world who have other priorities. They don't think publishing, perhaps they think that maybe feeding more people may be more important.
What is their priority other than a totalitarian regime who's repressing their own people, repressing women? I mean, we could get into some of the surgeries done on women in some of these countries. It's hard to look at these countries
Look back on us 100 years ago. Look back on us and try to judge because of the resource difference. First of all, colonialism extracted the wealth from these countries and imported it to Europe for our own benefit, for European benefit, for Western benefit, all of the resources of these countries.
Saddam didn't have oil money? That the sheikhs in Saudi Arabia
don't have oil money?
Iraq was created by Britain, man. Don't you know?
Getting that oil money for the last 50
And the reason
years?
They were created was from Chicago. Their oil.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency! Help! We're in a mess! Our guys blew a tire and crashed into us!
I will get you some help on the line.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a collision out here on Highway 1 with airbag deployment. I'm going to conference into the vehicle.
Hello?
We were just in a head-on collision.
Are you okay?
No!
My daughter's hurt.
like horrible stress.
I can't get out and get you where I would, okay? I'm stuck.
Okay, we have troopers and medic on the way out there.
We need a new car.
With automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can share your exact GPS location and critical crash details with first responders so they're better prepared to help.
Okay, there's police here. Thank you. Oh, okay. Well, I hope you and the little one are going to be okay.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. This discussion has not stopped during the commercial break. We're going to just keep it rolling here.
Let me, I wish everybody could hear the discussions during the break.
No, I'm just saying this is a great flowing discussion we have. Salim, let me ask you point blank the question. Should we, meaning the United States, should we allow Iran to gain the nuclear weapons?
No, I think nuclear nonproliferation should be our stance on this, and I think that we can, I think that we can easily do it with a more aggressive diplomatic thrust. I think that we should take the opportunity.
What could we do?
Both Roger and Don talked about the other countries involved, Saudi Arabia. And how, what are they going to think about the Persian or the Shia getting the bomb? I think there's a lot of anxiety in the Sunni world about this. I think we should use this opportunity to use that anxiety to bring the Saudis and the Israelis and many others who are wary of Iran together in a joint effort with the Russians and the Chinese in a joint effort to convince the Iran. And they already have said, at least rhetorically, they say that nuclear weapons are an abomination. And so we can use their own rhetoric to kind of force them into a corner. I think it would be very easy. We simply would use the diplomatic route more aggressively.
I wish you were right.
If it was easy, it would have been done already, I think.
Yeah. If it were the, I mean,
we haven't tried.
Trusting the Russians and the Chinese who have huge
we're too paranoid
trading relationships
now.
With there's a reason why we're paranoid.
Yes,
there's a reason for this.
There's a
Let's go to Burr Ridge, Illinois. Thomas listening to us on WLS. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm going to try to not get too excited. But I'm absolutely disgusted and saddened by what's going on. You know, we have a president who we all know has no experience, no financial experience, no business experience, no military experience. He's got time to run to Copenhagen. He's got time to be on David Letterman. He's got time to be on all the national programs. He's got time to be on television 3 or 4 times a day. We had 8 kids that died in Afghanistan yesterday. And the message that he's sending loud and clear to the Afghanistani people and to the combatants over there, the Taliban or whoever the hell they are, is that we can't make a decision. Now, we either got to go over there and support our troops or get them the hell out of there. I mean, this is a travesty. If anybody's got blood on their hands, it's Barack Obama. And it's just so infuriating.
Where's the blood? What blood are you talking about, sir?
What?
What blood are you talking about?
I'm talking
the blood
about
of the millions
blood
who are
of those
the uninsured
and those people that are over there, because he has got time to go on David Letterman in Copenhagen and not take care of this problem and get the people together and make a decision within 24 or 48 hours. Then just pull our troops out of there and get them the hell out of the way.
All right, let's let Don Turner respond to that castigation of the president.
Look, it's a serious issue that the president's faced with. And I think taking a few days to look at this, I don't think a snap judgment decision should be done on something like this
weeks.
That's this serious.
Tom, you made your comment. I'll give you a final word, but let's let Don finish his thought.
I think conferring with Stanley Crystal, as he did in Copenhagen, is warranted given this situation, and we have to wait and see what Crystal's suggesting. It's been leaked that he's suggesting 40,000 more troops. So,
how many more people do you want to sacrifice, sir? How many more people? Why don't you take this program and go over to Afghanistan and do your program from over there while the fighting's going on and the people are being disheartened because America can't make a decision? You know, it's pretty good for you guys to sit around and have all this conversation about the Sunnis and the Shmoonies and whoever the hell else it is in Iraq and Iran and Israel and on and on. Our kids are in arms.
Do you know who When we talk about the
Sunnis
and the
Shia, it'll be next year before he makes it.
Sir, when we talk about the Sunni and the Shia, we're talking about the people in the region. You don't seem to care too much about those people, but yet you seem to be concerned that they're being killed. Which one is it?
You don't seem to care about our guys, do you? Is that what you're saying?
Oh no, of course I care about our guys. Well, I mean, my point is that you seem to be very dismissive of those people. And yet, what the president seems to be doing is taking their arguments into consideration.
Tom, let me put your I think your major gripe is that it's taking too long to make the decision. But let me put it in context.
Okay.
There was an election last year. Leading up to that election, there was 18 months of discussion. Barack Obama, said during that campaign what he wanted to do. All right. He appointed a general several months ago to look into this. He has now done the report. Again, this is a huge commitment that he is asking for. It's also basically a reaffirmation of the strategy that we're using there. And it seems to me that it is not unwise for any president to periodically review the conduct of a war or any federal policy. And that's what Barack Obama appears to be doing now. And the question is, can he do it in 24 or 48 hours? You know, that's a particular, you have a fast timetable to turn that discussion around.
Bruce,
but that doesn't mean
Bruce,
that he is not doing that right now as we speak.
It's been, how long has it been, 3 weeks? He found time to go to Copenhagen, right?
He went, but sir, can I tell you something? He went, and we made this point in the last hour. He went to Copenhagen, and he met face-to-face with the general that he selected to wage the war. He had a conversation. It seems to me that if you're asking for 40,000 more troops, or you're the president that's going to say yes to 40,000 troops, you shouldn't just read a report. You should look the man in the eye. You should have a conversation with him. He is the commander-in-chief, and you should have that conversation. Then you can go back and you can discuss it and debate it and have others, either affirm it or disagree with it. But there is a discussion going on because the ramifications are phenomenal. And you're right. People do die every single day that the decision has not been made.
Let me ask you a question. He met with McChrystal, right?
Yes.
On the tarmac?
Yes.
For how many minutes?
Don't know, sir.
Well, it was like 45 minutes or 30 minutes.
He met for 45 minutes.
Yes. And 8 of our kids died yesterday.
And that's tragic.
And the message that he's sending, that America is sending to the Afghanistani people and to the combatants is, we're going to take our time. We might get it next week, the week after. In the meantime, if you're a villager in Afghanistan, okay, if you're a villager, are you going to stand up and support the Americans? Because they may be gone next week or the week after. Let's get real here. You guys can sit around there and discuss this and talk about all these things. Our kids are dying. And if we don't have a country and a people that cares enough about their military, they put them in harm's way, and then they go on a David Letterman show. I think it's disgusting. I am absolutely disgusted.
Tom, you've made your point. Thanks very much,
Tom.
Let's go to Jay in Cooksville, Tennessee, listening to us on WNOX. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. It's Jerry, but, Jay's close enough.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it seems like the one gentleman on your panel, he's it sounds like he's read too much Asa Hilliard III and Leonard Jeffries Jr., but anyway, the deal with...
So you're well-versed on Afrocentrism, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right, anyway, very good. I'm proud of you.
The deal with Iran wanting a nuclear weapon because Israel has one, I think people need to remember what Ayatollah Khomeini said. He said he didn't care if the land burned and if the people burned as long as Islam came out ahead in the world to rule the civilization, to rule the world. This is about the 12th Imam bringing him back. And the only way he can come back is through a major, major Holocaust, which Ahmadinejad is, he's...
It sounds a little bit like the Left Behind people, the Christian evangelicals. That's kind of what they talk about, isn't it?
It is the
Book of Revelations, right?
The world. Hang on if I might talk.
The Abrahamic religions.
Let's let Jay
finish. The world with nuclear weapons. this radical Muslim fanatic is. So there is a big difference here. I mean, how many Buddhists do you see going out threatening the world? I don't see any. You know,
look at Sri Lanka, my fellow.
Excuse me?
Look at what happened in Sri Lanka.
Hindus moving into a Buddhist country.
Right, well, the Buddhists are being accused of a conflagration, of
ahead,
genocide.
Finish the conversation, Jerry.
I agree. But. So anyway, and then Jimmy Carter gets up and he goes on his anti-Semitic rants, and then you come to find out that he's got millions of dollars from the Bank of Credit and Commerce International that was founded by a guy named Aga Hassan Abedi, who helped build out Carter's peanut farm back in the 80s. And this is what the man said. He said that in order to build the best bridge to the world to help Islam and the best way to fight the evil influence of Zionism. And then, in fact, one of the head of the UN, Boutros Ghali, said, for decades, Israel had been the enemy.
Jerry, let me just bring it to a head here, because I want to ask you two specific questions, because this is the question that the president's got to deal with right now. What I'm hearing you say is, under no circumstances would you allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon.
No.
And you would favor 40,000 more troops in Afghanistan.
Well, I don't know if it would be 40, 20, or 30. That's something that you'll have to work out with the generals. He is the president. That would be his decision. But, I mean, he said he was going to listen to the generals on the ground.
Is there anyone else other than the generals that a president should listen to when he's about to send people to war, in your view, Jerry?
I would have to say the generals, because they're the ones, I mean, they're the guys that have trained all their lives in for this moment where they're at, and I would have to give it to the generals. Give them the call.
Okay, thanks for your call. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, back with more calls when we roll on from Chicago.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Are you about to lose your home to foreclosure? Hope and help are here. The associates of the Debt Reduction Law Center would like to offer you a free, no-obligation consultation that will show you how to stop foreclosure, reduce your interest rates, and save thousands on your mortgage. Don't lose your home to foreclosure. The Debt Reduction Law Center is a network of attorneys that can help you modify the terms of your mortgage. They work for you so you can afford to live in and enjoy the place your family calls home. Call for a free, no-obligation consultation. There is absolutely no cost to find out how this program can help you save your home. Call 800-646-8709. That's 800-646-8709. It does not matter what your credit score is or how far behind you are on payment. Individual results will vary, not available in all states. For your free, no-obligation consultation, call now. 800-646-8709. Stop foreclosure in its tracks. Call today. 800-646-8709.
From El Paso, Texas to Redding, California, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway from coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night, now in our 29th year on the air. Anniversary coming up next June, the big 3-0, and joining us around the table this evening, a spirited discussion as we've had for many, many years. Our Republican tonight is Roger Keats. Roger, for 16 years, was an Illinois state senator. He is a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, retired. How many years?
28
years, and also was in the securities business, and is now running for president of the Cook County Board, which is the second largest county in the United States. And in 50 words or less, or 100 words or less, why do you want this job that has become such a it looks to be an unmanageable operation?
In 50 words or less, first answer is corruption. Second answer is it's not unmanageable. The mistake people make is they look at the big picture instead of saying, how do I break up all these bad things happening in the smaller component parts that I can fix step by step? So we can fix many of these problems, but corruption is a single biggest
issue.
And
for those who believe, who listen to this program and know the vice-like grip that the Democratic Party has on the city of Chicago and the county of Cook, and to some extent, even the state of Illinois, Why do you think a Republican can win that race?
In 2006, Tony Parrike, our candidate, got almost 47% of the vote in a terrible Republican year. And when you look at the performance of the people running Illinois and Cook County, all of whom are Democrats, their performance since 2006, you have tons of people, and we're going to get our nominating petition, Democrats signing our petition saying, we got to change this stuff. So the answer is, as people wake up more and more, what's happening to our state, a great state and a great country, being destroyed by corrupt and inefficient government.
Our Democrat tonight is Don Turner. He is the President Emeritus of the Chicago Federation of Labor. That's AFL-CIO, a lifelong labor activist and leader. Comes out of the Teachers Union and is now officially retired,
yes.
Enjoying retirement,
absolutely.
Doing all the things that you've always wanted to do.
And more.
And you look stress-free.
I am.
And joining us also this evening is Salim Uwakil. He is a talk show host on WVON Radio, and he's the senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals. And by the way, I wanted to mention, we have a lot of callers on the line who obviously are picking up on our discussion of the Middle East and Iran and Afghanistan, and we haven't talked much about Iraq tonight. But again, we're in a heated discussion of this. I want to keep these conversations going. But I did say at the beginning of the broadcast we were going to spend some time talking about the devastating crime figures that are coming out in the city of Chicago. Perhaps this past week you saw the devastating video that played around the world of Darian Albert, who was a 16-year-old Chicago student who was beaten to death in a horrible video that is circling the world. And the President of the United States believes that something can be done and must be done about it. There's been growing pressure for him to get involved. Next week, he is sending the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, to Chicago, as well as the Education Secretary, Arnie Duncan, who used to run the Chicago public school systems. And again, this crime is not taking place in the schools, but it certainly is taking place near the schools. And again, it is a devastating situation, so much so that I want to spend just a moment talking about it now, but we're going to do a whole program on it and really expand it out in the future. By the way, just consider this. There's an organization called the Black Star Project. That is an advocacy group that mentors and tutors Black and Latino students in this city of Chicago. They've counted 53 children and teens under the age of 18 who have been killed in Chicago from Labor Day of last year to Labor Day of this year. And executive director, Philip Jackson, puts also that figure in context. Since the Iraq War started in 2003, there have been 10 soldiers from the city of Chicago who've given their life in defense of the country. And during that same time period, over 300 Chicago children have been killed because of violence. Salim Uwakil, I know this story is near and dear to your heart, to your community's heart. You were at a public service yesterday that really was that followed in the wake of the tragic story involving Darian. What is the tone? What is the level of anger, angst? What's the feeling within the Black community about the current wave of crime?
Well, there's a lot of anger out there. People are talking vigilante talk. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of guilt and shame, quite frankly. A lot of people were embarrassed by the video because they feel that it reveals a part of the Chicago, their community, that they wish was not so ugly. And yet there's also an understanding. There's a lot of anger at the administration, because many people say that the so-called plan for transformation in the housing department, what it did was it distributed a lot of young people in various strange neighborhoods because of the housing that was knocked down. And these young children are now going into these new neighborhoods and they're strangers, and it's causing a lot of turf battles. So
that specifically is at the core problem involving the student that was brutally
murdered. Exactly.
At Fenger High School.
Yeah, exactly.
You had warring factions within the school.
Within the school.
Gang recruitment?
Well, it wasn't so much gang recruitment as it was territorial. There was one part of town that was their school, Carver, was closed because it became a magnet school. And so they had to relocate to another school, and this group of students who were really they had long-time rivalries with this Roseland school, and they were simply moved in. And since school began, they had these problems. And
we're going to discuss this. As I said, we're going to do an entire program on this in a couple of weeks. We want to find out what Eric Holder and Arnie Duncan have to say this coming week. And also, by the way, we were scheduled to have this evening the mayor of Youngstown, Ohio, Jay Williams, on. We're going to have him on in a couple of weeks because, again, like many cities in the United States, he, too, in the city of Youngstown, has dealt with significant violence within the city. And we're going to find out what, if anything, how do you get through to the young thugs that are involved in this
And, Bruce, there's
murder.
Also an unemployment rate of about 40% in both of those neighborhoods.
But a lot of people who are unemployed don't kill people. But you're right, and that's another issue. But, again, we want to look at some of the issues that maybe can resolve. Each of our guests want to make a comment.
I want to bring up a key point. Before we come back to schools, I'm going to let Don talk about the schools a minute, but I want to say before we come back to those, and Philip Jackson and Black Star is great. I've been to fundraisers there. He's a great guy. It's a good group.
Absolutely.
But what I want to say is, if we don't deal with the family structure issue, if you look at the 53 kids who've been killed essentially in the last year, and I haven't read all the news stories, but there's one thing almost all of them have in common, broken family structures. If we don't start dealing with the broken family structure, strengthening them, trying to get back to the fact so the kids have a base other than the gang, that is something we've got to deal with because we've got to protect the kids who are trying.
Do you begin to do that?
Part of them is just traditional families. We need to have a situation where kids have – and this is a great frustration for a moment. I'm going to say tongue-in-cheek. Teenagers do dumb things. I was a teenage boy. Teenage boys do dumb things. I promise you that. Mm-hmm. They need positive male role models. A favorite of mine, the late Judge Eugene Pinchem, used to say you can't ask a man to do something he's never seen. And so he ran that probation challenge thing out of his courtroom with Reverend – oh, it begins with a B. I can't think of his name right now. But – just try and get mentors and have young inner-city kids see positive male role models because they need it just desperately. You can't ask someone to do something they've never seen. And that's – and there, believe me, there are plenty of black male groups that are trying very hard, and male groups and Christian groups and Muslim groups and everything, trying to reach out to help. But until we deal with the family structure issue – and this is not a racial issue. This is a family structure issue. Until we deal with this – it's just going to stay like that because the bulwark against these problems for years and years in America, for centuries, has been a family structure where the family disciplined the kids from within. And no, we've got to protect the good
guys. Don Turner.
The fundamental job at the root of every society is the ability to contain young, unattached males. And until you figure out a way to contain them and direct them in kind of a way that's social, that's productive for the society, mm-hmm. you're going to have these problems. But that is the fundamental role of every society around the world. That's what every
Absolutely.
Society tries
mm-hmm.
to do.
That's why
we're failing. We're failing in this country in that
true.
Regard.
Just about every society has a Boy Scouts, a Boys Club, or mm-hmm. some group that, as Roger points out, this male energy, this testosterone-fueled aggression is something that we all – as humans have to deal with and find some way of containing it and making it innocuous or community, you know, building up the community. And that is one of the pushes that you hear much in the community now is to be much more aggressive and increasing that male mentoring model that Roger talks about. The fact is that's true. Young people do not know how to act like a man if they don't see men around.
150 years ago, many of these young men would have run away to sea.
Mm-hmm.
They would have,
that's right.
you know, or,
right. or going out west and become
when
cowboys.
When I was a young
exactly.
man, many people were pushed into the military.
Absolutely.
I mean, I had friends who, you know, stole a car and they went to see the judge, and the judge said, young man, I'm giving you
now.
Two choices. You go to jail or you're going to sign up for the Marines
that's
or
right.
something
and
like that.
And a drill sergeant
and you know
can
what?
Grow you
and
up
you
very
what?
Quickly.
That's true. That's
and
true.
You know what? These guys became pretty good citizens.
Absolutely.
You know? But those kind of efforts, I think, are going to be needed.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But what are the outlets for these young, unattached males? I mean, how
do you
They
have very
control?
Few now, and that is the problem. You look at any of their neighborhoods, they have very little recreational facilities. And so it's really very difficult to get them to act, to socialize that energy, that energy that's out there.
Has in the past, and again, we're getting into the discussion here. In fact, we're going into a break, so we can't even get into it. But we are going to get into it soon. But we're also coming back to the core discussion we had. Got a little diversion there, but we'll come back. We've got a full board of lights. We'll take the calls in the next 15 minutes, and that'll start in about 3 minutes. Back shortly.
Can you hear that? Can you hear it?
It's very annoying.
I hear it.
Can you hear that sound? That ringing, that hissing.
I can't get to sleep with it.
I can't concentrate. I hear it constantly.
You can't hide from it.
Everywhere I go, it doesn't go away. It drives me nuts.
It's tinnitus.
A constant ringing in your ear caused by loud machines.
Loud music.
Ah, finally. Quietus.
I love Quietus. Quietus will stop the ringing fast.
Quietus is all-natural, chewable, quiet relief.
Quiet relief so I can work.
I now get a full night's rest. Quietus has helped thousands of people with tinnitus.
Quietus is real, my friend.
Quietus has changed my life.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. As I mentioned in hour number one, the Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremony is coming up on Saturday, November 7th at the Renaissance Hotel in Chicago. And we have got confirmation. George Norrie from Coast to Coast PM is going to be the host of the show. Jim Bohannon of Westwood One will be the announcer. We've got a great group of inductees for this year, and including Wendy Williams and Studs Terkel. And Harry Callis, the former voice, late voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, and Ed Walker from Washington, D.C., great, great group. Norm Pattis as an executive. But here is what we have. This is new news. These are the confirmed presenters. All of these people going to be in the same room in Chicago on November 7th. Your opportunity to meet them up close and personal. Rush Limbaugh, Dennis Miller, Jonathan Brandmeier, and Willard Scott, formerly of the Today Show, used to be a partner with Ed Walker. They will all be in Chicago. Again, tickets are $350. It's November 7th. If you'd like to attend, museum.tv is the website. Or if you want to call, 312-822-0512. And it will be quite a night to celebrate radio with some of the biggest names in the industry. Let's go to Paul in Chicago on WLS, a patient man waiting for a long time.
How are you?
Okay.
I just want to make two quick points. One on Afghanistan. I want to remind everybody that, as far as I know, the President of the United States is listening to his national security team, which includes Secretary Gates, Admiral Mullen, and General Jones. And all three of those gentlemen who are distinguished military people are all in a concurrence of a review. And I happen to concur with that review. I think that we really need to take a look at our policy and exactly what General McChrystal needs. I'm not a big supporter of COIN. COIN was only a partial success in Iraq, and we need to understand why that all occurred over in Iraq. It just wasn't COIN or the surge. As far as Iran is concerned, I think it's a point that's missing here. It's not about threats on the Iranian side. I'm not a big fan of the Iranian regime. We should have taken out that regime a long, long time ago. Problem we have is with the NPT and the IAEA and fairness to everybody, which would include not just Israel. IAEA has been attempting to enter into their enrichment facilities.
And that's the International Atomic Energy Commission is what you're talking about, correct?
The IAEA has been attempting to enter their enrichment facility. We have India and Pakistan outside the NPT and North Korea still in withdrawal. And the problem we have here is, if you want to take a look at a real threat to the United States, forget the regional threat, Iran is still about 10 or 15 years away from actually matching a warhead to the pencil or to the launch vehicle. The real threat we face is Pakistan, because if we destabilize Pakistan, gentlemen, they already have nuclear weapons. Mm. They'll beat the Iranians or the Islamic fascists will beat the Iranians to nuclear weapons long before the Iranians even ever think of merging a warhead to the missile. So what we need to do is be fair to all. We cannot be telling any country while we are blocking one other or we're running defense for another one. And I believe that Israel needs to have her proper defense. I also believe that Israel needs to come in within the NPT and open its doors to the IAEA, who have been asking the Israelis for access. We can't tell the Iranians, you got to listen to the IAEA and not tell the Israelis the same thing. That's where we fail as a foreign policy. And the same thing goes with Afghanistan. We need to take a look at these policies and to make them stronger and to be fair right across the board.
Reaction, Roger Keats.
Well, I hear part of what you're saying. There's a little bit I agree with, some a lot I disagree with. But part of it is something called moral equivalency. And for you to put a democracy that the Israeli democracy is not perfect by any stretch, but at the same time, they are a democracy, and there are Muslims who sit in the Knesset. There are freedoms for Muslims who are citizens within Israel. To give them the moral equivalency to terrorist states, I just don't buy it. You're just on a tangent when you give moral equivalency. Now, some of your other points are good points. I'm concerned about Pakistan. To say 15 years away for Iran, I'm sorry, there's nobody in the world agrees that Iran's 15 years away. But the point is, we have to remember moral equivalency in the world does not exist. There are totalitarian states that should not be treated the same as open countries.
Salim Ukil.
I don't think moral equivalency is the issue. I mean, we can argue that, but I don't think that's what he's talking about. I think he's saying that if the IAEA does not act as if it is monitoring Israel's military arsenal, its nuclear arsenal, then we really have no credibility to demand that sort of access to others. And I think that's the point he's making, and I think that's a good point.
Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Nick is listening to us on KTSM. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, I believe what President Obama is facing is that when he was campaigning and the anti-war left always said that we should be in Afghanistan, not in Iraq, it was used, Afghanistan was used as a hammer to hit President George W. Bush over the head.
That's
they
true.
Never really meant it that they would go to Afghanistan to fight a war. They're never in favor of war. And if the Taliban takes over Afghanistan and we throw those people underneath the bus, there's going to be a war between Pakistan and India then, the Taliban that's going to start, with Kashmir up there. But the anti-war left...
Don, turn in 30 seconds.
I think he actually just stated the fears for the whole region.
And I agree.
Why,
I agree.
If Iran has a nuclear weapon, everybody else is going to have to run around and get them and get systems to deliver them and so on. So this is a big issue. I think it has to be dealt with in a forthright way.
We've got to say farewell on that note. Don Turner's been our Democrat, past president emeritus, or president emeritus of the Chicago Federation of Labor, a Democrat. Roger Keats, our Republican state senator for 16 years and running for the county board presidency. And Salim Muakil of In These Times. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart helped make this program possible. Until next week at this same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Money talks, and it sounds just like Jim Cramer.
I'm Cramer. Money talks, and sometimes it shouts when the results speak for themselves.
Investors worldwide follow Jim Cramer's advice on TV, in books, and on websites like TheStreet.com. And whether the market's up, down, or sideways, Jim's always hunting down a bull market. And now you can follow Cramer's portfolio at GetCramer.com.
Okay, here's how it works. Every time I buy or sell, I will email you ahead of time. Did you hear me? Ahead of time! It's like, if you can read, you can read my mind. My portfolio, fueled by my great research, is designed to deliver success. And I'll share it with you at GetCramer.com.
Today, you can sign up for 2 weeks of free access to Cramer's Picks and Portfolio. Just go to GetCramer.com and enter code word
Dow. GetKramer.com. Free today. Go to GetKramer.com. Code word Dow.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
October is approaching, and the 2009 MLB postseason is on TBS.
Fly ball, right center field. Can you believe it?
The push for the pennant is on, with every division series game on one network, along with exclusive coverage of the NLCS. The excitement is here.
Swung on, rip. That ball is out.
When the dust settles, only one team can claim their place as National League champs. The MLB postseason begins Wednesday on TBS. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Wow. Whoa, what is this? A trap on our front lawn?
Yeah, it's a trap. I'm going to catch that stack of money with the googly eyes right there, the money I could be saving with Geico.
But it's right there in front of you. Just get it.
Psh, where's the fun in that? Then I wouldn't get to use these 200-pound springs or these laser sensors.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to just call Geico. I mean, it's what normal people do.
Well, then I guess I'm just more adventurous than most.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Napa has brakes for just about anything, but no one makes brakes for the one thing we'd like to stop most, breast cancer. That's why Napa is proud to partner with Susan G. Komen for the cure. And this month, when you spend $25 at a participating Napa Auto Parts store or Napa Auto Care Center, you'll get a free Napa Susan G. Komen for the cure travel mug while supplies last. Napa will also donate $250,000 to Komen. Napa, get the good stuff and support a great cause.